are in touch with WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM. Up next on the radio is a special edition of What's Your Point with me, Garnet Anker. Where a song is concerned, the listener wants to know the name of the singer, with little or no regard for the musicians who worked to help make it a reality. If it is an instrumental, maybe the listener listens with little interest in knowing the names of the musicians who worked to make the music. Many musicians and their works are treated as though they were second or third class citizens of their own jobs. Many are happy to remain unknown behind the scenes and do their works with pride and joy. In a sense, they are comparable to ghost writers of a book. On the show today, a welcome bass player with the legendary Scatterlights band, Val Douglas. Val, welcome to What's Your Point?
Thank you.
Good to be here. Yeah, and let us start off talking a little about this COVID-19 that is putting a spoke in the entire world. How are you treating yourself? How are you staying away and making sure you don't catch this dangerous disease?
Well, as you say, it's like it was spider in the spokes, right? You know, well, it just means that, you know, we're really off the road, you know. Because, I mean, as far as live music goes, you know, all that gets cramped, you know, all that gets cramped. So, getting a lot of extra time to rest, some of the time we don't really need, but to still do this, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, trying to keep off the road, you know, and watch TV and talk to your friends on the phone and stuff like that. Mm. Yeah, keep alive.
Yeah. You know? And you're doing all that you can to remain healthy and wash your hands, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But staying in means you don't have to do much of that, you know. I try to stay in a lot, you know what I'm saying? Mm. You don't go on the road unless you really need to. You know, and then regular, you know, going by what the scientists tell us to do. You know,
indeed.
That makes sense.
Yes. And it's good to know that you're doing all you can to keep this virus at bay where you're concerned. If I look at your passport, what would I see as your given name?
Valentine Lloydson Constantine Douglas. Nice long name.
Can you say that again?
Valentine Lloyd Saint Constantine Douglas.
Indeed, and I know a Lloyd would have to be in there, right? And we talk about Lloyd Brivett later.
Why? Yeah. Lloyd thing is like a musician name, especially around the Scatterlights. You know?
Indeed, indeed, indeed. We'll get to that in a little while. How did you take to school growing up as a boy? Did you like school, or what did you do?
Yeah, well, school. Well, I mean, I was born in school. In school, basically, my parents, you know, teachers. You know what I mean? So, born in a teacher's cottage, out in the country. You know what I mean? So, school was alright. You know, school was good. You know what I mean? I mean, growing up amongst parents who were teachers, you know, you didn't look at school as some you should like or not like. It was just part of your life, you know.
And so what do you consider your favorite subject in school?
Maths person. I never feel a maths test.
Okay.
A lot of my life and even my music. And music is math too, you know. A lot of music is math. You know, some musicians might tell you, oh, they don't like math. But, you know, for you go from one bar to the next bar. You do calculations and stuff that you know you're not even aware of. You know what I'm saying? The music is must, you know. So it's all in my best subjects, and yeah, music is must.
so you didn't take your studies to the tertiary level though. You just went into music after that.
Well, I went to class and did mechanical engineering up there for 2 years. I still owed them 1 year. I didn't do the final year because, you know, my second year, I started playing music like in my first year. My second year, I was getting paid because I was like doing a lot of studio work, like really quick, you know. I really came into business kind of late-ish, but I got it. I move fast, you know, so I was able to make money from studio work. That was more than guys who had, you know, graduated from class 2 years, you know. Okay.
And you're talking about the College of Arts, Science and Technology, which is now being renamed to the University of Technology.
So I didn't know my final year, you know. Uh-huh. So it was kind of hard, I didn't know, because I was, you know, by that time I was really like, doing a lot of gigs and studio work and traveling and all that. It was rough. So I didn't see the point of doing that third year. Actually, I thought I would get back to doing the third year later on in life, you know what I mean? Maybe 2-3 years down the road, but I just never got back to that. You know?
It's still not too late.
I should think it is. Huh? Yeah, I'm sure it is too late. I'm like, that third year wouldn't have done much for me for what I wanted to do. You know what I'm saying?
So, at what point did you realize you wanted to become a bass player?
Well, that's another long story, though. I used to have, you know, a regular little box guitar, right, from I was in third form high school, yeah. Third form, my brother bought me a box guitar, you know. He had borrowed a box guitar and took it home and I got interested in it and started fooling on it. So when he graduated from high school and started work, he bought me a guitar. Some guy where he was working at Alcan in Kirkland Works down in Manchester. And some guy was selling a small box guitar. He just bought it and gave it to me. So I always had this box guitar right through high school and then from there went to cast. But I used to play full on the piano too, you know. But yeah, so the two things mixed together and I was at cast, and at lunchtime there were two guys who were in a band called Mighty Mystics. Mikey Chung.
Mm-hmm. Another generation.
And Junior Holding, Ralph Holding Jr. That's Mikey Holding's brother.
Who is now deceased, huh?
Yeah, I heard he died. Yes. I don't know how he died. We were out of contact for a long time. Mm-hmm. But what happens at lunchtime, you know, class, you have this big cafeteria called Farquharson Hall.
Yes.
Right? So at lunchtime, Mikey and Ralph used to go around the piano. There's a piano, you go on the corner, and they would go around there and they start playing all kind of little songs and stuff like that. And Ralph was really the keyboard player, Mikey was an all-rounder, you know, mm-hmm. Play guitar, he's really a guitarist, but he played keyboards too, so he'd play like the rhythm section, and Ralph would be playing all the little leads, and playing songs like, listening to tunes like what's his name now? Some pseudo one instrumental, you know, ding, so whatever, ding, so whatever, the two, right? Yeah. Deep in time, you know, some Jackie Beast.
Yes, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm. So then I played that, so eventually I ended up sitting over the B section, right? So if I have three of us sitting on the piano, I will start playing like the bass lines and stuff like that, you know. Mike can play with him and Jennifer play the thing. Anyway, so we'll be doing that. And then, so Mikey and, like I said, Mikey and Ralph were had that doing this band called Mighty Mystics, which was like, you know, like Sparrow Tops and some kind of like KC guys. Actually, Ralph, I just left KC and come to class, you understand?
Yeah, yeah.
So, that Mighty Mystics had like Sparrow Taps and drums, and had like Hugh Walker and trumpet from KC, and a Poco of Gilvey's drum one player from KC too.
Would you say that was in the 1970s?
That was in what? Say again?
That period of time was in the 1970s that you get?
No, that was 68.
So you mentioned a high school. Which high school was that? You went to?
Like blues, you know, George's.
St. George's College, okay.
So I'm pure Grand Street, man, you know, because Ralph come from KC, that's Cross Road.
Indeed.
You know what I'm saying?
His younger brother, Michael, went there too.
Second?
His younger brother, the student cricketer Michael Holden, now cricket commentator, also went to KC.
Yeah. That's him. So what happened is that they, you know, a young man, and they wanted the exposure, you know. So they asked the people at CAS if they could come and give a concert, a lunchtime concert, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And CAS students, you guys say, okay, yeah, you can come, you know. So like they arranged for like the next week, and the band, the bass player, they had some problem with the bass player, right?
Mm-hmm.
At first they told me that the guy was sick, right? Later on in life I found out, not really. His parents didn't want him to play.
Oh.
They were music to work, you know. I mean, even at that point, you know, people still, there's still slight stigma attached to musicians, you know.
Indeed.
You understand? You know, it wasn't like the perfect profession for someone to try to go out, you know what I'm saying?
This is that time.
So they told me, yeah, in them time, yeah, it was, you know, you have your musician, they kind of look like you, like, you know, is it just the music you want to go into it for, or if you just don't want to be in the regular society or what? Anyway, so they couldn't get a bass, they couldn't find a bass player, you know? So, and then Mikey said, well, Doug, you know, the play guitar, man, you have a guitar. I used to board at class, right?
Uh-huh.
Them guys were day scholars, they'll come in the day and leave. But I used to board. So yeah, I'll get up in the room. So yeah, you know, so, but you know what I mean? You know, I'll be bassline them for these tunes and stuff, and you can, you know, your guitar. So while you watch, I be, you know, I'll play some bass. But I said, how many? You know what I mean? I'm like, what? I said, yeah, man, we can, I'll bring a bass and an amplifier, and we can go in the other common room, go in the common room beside the cafeteria, where there's another piano, right? And we can rehearse in there, like, wow, okay. So I said, okay, I'll go finish with them for that day, you know, so. Yeah, so so I ended up Tuesday evening, and we rehearsed for about maybe 2-3 hours, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because we just race it for the one show, just one hour, you know, so people like say, hey, you, and people, you know, like talking with you, and mm-hmm. some other things like that, because that era, you know.
Yes.
And plus the band had singers like Noel Brown, you know, and Keith and Tex were part of the band too, mm-hmm. you know.
So all these and band Keith members were students at UTEP.
No, just Mikey and Ralph alone were students at UTEC.
And yourself?
Huh?
And yourself? Those three of you were members?
Yeah, just we three, you know, from UTEC, of cast. You know, rest of them. Like I say, Keith was, I think Keith had just left KC. And Walker, Trumpeter, Trombone is poker. They were still at KC, you know, yeah. as high school. So they were coming up. Anyway, so me, that's me and Ralph and Mike, you know, rehearsed Tuesday evening. And the next day, Wednesday, I was on stage at 12 o'clock, you know, at lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And so I was meeting the rest of the band for the first time.
So that's your first band. What's the name of it again? Remind me.
The Mighty Mystics.
Why that name?
Mystics. Why?
Uh-huh.
No, I mean, I don't really ask him. Wow, that's a nice name. You're a mystic, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? You know, you're not ordinary, you're a mystic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? A little deeper than the rest of you. Know, a little deeper than the regular person, I guess, you know. That's a nice name. Those days, people be naming them about Mighty Vikings,
yeah.
Mighty Virtues,
yeah.
a whole bunch of mighty.
Everything was mighty. So that's where your thing came through in the 1968 thereabout at UTEC, where you realized that okay, this is what I wanted to do.
Well, I mean, I was doing good at UTEC. Still can't get used to the UTEC name.
It's all right.
I'm doing good at class. I mean, and so that was my first year there. You know. Anyway, my point is, the next thing is that, after we did the 1 hour show, right, a little less than 1 hour because we had to finish before, you know, to go back to class and all that. So it was like a 45-minute thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we finished, all the drummer spotted up and said, nice busy. You know,
okay.
I never forget that thing because, you know, I've been called a bassy now, you know.
Yeah.
The first time I really play a bass, I really played on, live and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, it was like a big compliment just to be called busy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like I said, it was the first time I was meeting all the rest of the band and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they seemed, they appreciated, I guess, you know, the fact that I came in and the whole show went along smooth, no problem, no mistake, kind of, you know. So the show was so good that they asked, Mikey, they asked students, you know, again, if we could come back the next week again.
Uh-huh.
And the next week was, well, that was actually what we call Holy Week.
Yeah.
Because that was a week, last week, I mean. So that was on a Wednesday. That was a Wednesday again. And the next day, I think, we went home for holiday, for Easter holidays. You know, Thursday. That was only Thursday or what have you. Anyway, so we did it again the next week and everything got all good. And, you know, first of the years, I used to be a good dancer, you know. I was always a good dancer from all the youth. You understand? I used to win some dance contests and all of the things as youth. So the first day on stage, I was nervous. So, to not really show all the nerves and all that, I had to dance. Because my knees were about to wobble anyway, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up like dancing along with Ampley, you know, just dancing. Them days, bass players don't dance. Bass players stand up like you know, like a statue. Yeah, man, the bass player, some of my famous bass, some of my favorite bass players is have all the dark glasses and a chew some chewing gum and just look serious.
Yeah.
And now move a muscle. Right? So, I guess that further impressed the guys in the band. So, why y'all are dance? You know what I mean? It's bass players. Bass players, all right. So, that's how I ended up on, you know, in the actual life after this music scene, you know. Yeah.
So,
you know,
so what did it feel
like? I was saying, oh, you know, so it wasn't like I was always, you know, one day I'm gonna be a face player. No, I was not like that. I like my guitar, and I used to like working out chords and things like that. Things interest me, you know what I'm saying? And piano wise, you know, like I say, you know, I grew up in a teacher's cottage, yes, and,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, my mother bought a nice piano named nice Chalen piano she bought when I was like 6 years old. And she used to actually, like, give piano lessons to some of the students. At their primary school too, right? You know, because we live right on the same premises with the school.
You are listening to What's Your Point on WPKN Radio. My guest is Val Douglas, bassist with the legendary Scatterlites band. I am Garnet Ankle. What school was that?
At the primary school, London Clarendon, Riches Primary School.
Okay.
It's near to like, usually it's a small place, but I mean, small but an important place, just the same. It's like the center of the country. But usually when I tell anybody, I usually have to say like, oh, it's like 3 miles from Spalding's. And if they still know, like pick up Spalding's, I say, oh, well, that's like 6 or 7 miles of Christiana.
Yeah.
And they usually say, oh, okay, alright. So really that bad, then I say, alright, like 15 miles from Mandela, okay? But that is that which is my sense, and, you know, like a big dream was such a small district and stuff. But what I'm saying is that, you know, in the forecast, when I go home for holidays and all that, my mother had a piano in the house. The school was right near. It had a piano near too. And the church was right near. It had an organ. So we used to have a choice. You know, we go bang something. You know, call a couple of bridges them from around the district. I was start bang some piano or something in the school. You know, get the key from old man and go in and do something. So I was always into, you know, like piano work, you know, not a big pianist or anything. But I was into like the chord structures and stuff like that. I was not into the soloing thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was solo with bass, no. But back then I was just like getting the chords and stuff. And that really helped me. It helped me with my bass work too, you know, the fact that I'm into chord structures and, you know, movements and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how I ended up in that band. So it was like, I was like, okay, one day, no. You know, a lot of kids come up saying, well, one day they want to play in this band, or play in that band. I always like to watch bands and stuff like that. If I got a chance, which I didn't get many chances, really. You know, but I really saw myself being in one. But like I dive in, you know, like I say, and you know, Mikey them call me, you know, try a thing and it work. So I stayed with that band, and that band stayed around for like another 2-3 months. and then we all like left the manager because we were getting good jobs. And we really were sounding much better than other bands that were getting regular jobs, you know.
So the Mighty Mystics lasted only 4 months?
Well, they lasted longer than that, but after I came in, it lasted like 3 months more, you know.
Okay.
So like I say, the first time I played with it was a week before Easter week, before Holy Week, right? And by the summer holidays, really, I think we did maybe about like one gig in the summer, and they called it quits. You know, but in between, in that last, you call it, that period between Easter and July, when we get summer break, mm-hmm. we had done one or two little gigs, like we did Tankati at Kingston Parish Church with the Paragons.
Oh, and John Holt.
So, yeah, but John Holt and Tyrone and Howie Hubbard. So we did them team. So, you know, we did, I think we did like, one or like maybe two theater gigs, you know. Like, I think there's one theater on Dean Road, Junior 30, we did that one, I remember doing
the that. The Living Theater on Dean Road.
No, on Dean Road.
And what is it? Tom Redcom Avenue.
No, not Little Theater, no.
Okay.
No, I'm saying that we did some little gigs, okay. And some small theaters, like there was a theater on Dean Road called this Globe Theater, yeah, there was Dean Road by near to Langston, near enough to Langston. Right? Mm-hmm. We did gigs like that, and I think we did a club named Sarax on King Street. That was a nice little club upstairs, mm-hmm. King Street, by the Roddy Amiel is control that club. Ice club dress, you know, really hip kind of club. But like I say, we did some of those little gigs during that term. And by the end of the term, we got frustrated because we really put out some good music. You understand? Everybody are fired, everybody really interested. And we were getting the jobs like the other. My fellow Carlo and Abbas, you're right. But we get this outside, the other bands, our peers, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know what? Tell you the Spanish band, right? Salim used to surprise the band, right? Nakisaki, they call him. I will leave that band, and I want to tell you, for that whole summer, I pulled the pavement. I was trying to get a manager, and there was one guy, like two different people were interested, and then come out to one guy interested, and then that fizzled out. Well, I mean, I ended up going to like Music Mart, which is really one good music store, you know, musical instruments store in Kingston and for Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
right? I go to there and I look for a third guitar and third, you know, amplifier and stuff. Especially keyboards I had to look out for, you know. You know, it's like a keyboard was a bigger investment, you know, more put my money on. You want to get a good keyboard, you want to look a fee keyboard, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So I would end up doing that, getting prices and stuff there. Then there was one other place that sold keyboards, a place in Bancroft Hilton.
Yeah, downtown Kingston.
Yeah, that's Upper King Street. Mm-hmm. King Street. King Street between like North Parade and what they call it, some Eastern Street. Maybe.
Yeah.
I go to somewhere, I remember looking at some little keyboard named Solina and something like that. And I was demonstrating them for me. And but the point is that for that whole summer, you know, I was trying to find someone. I'm sure Mary sounds so good. We can find a manager who can invest some money and just buy some instruments to it. And, you know, we had him work out a thing and him come manage, you know.
What was that? Okay.
And, you know, I was figuring we should be able to get a manager, but it didn't work out. So eventually, in the meantime, okay, so Noel Brown was part of the band, but he also sang with the Fabulous Falcons, right? So another band. They were doing some little gigs. So he called me in, right? The WSP are going. I played with them for 3 weeks. And after I played with them for 3 weeks, in the meantime, I was like, no, Mikey. And Dick Sparrow too, and I guess Sparrow and Keith from Keith and Tex, the singer.
Yeah.
They went to the Mighty Virtues, right? And they called me in to Virtues on the GX Falcon. Then I went to Virtues. And Virtues was, I spent like about nearly a year. I spent a year in Virtues, actually. Yeah. You know,
so, okay, so how did your parents, after leaving CAS, now UTEC, after leaving without graduating, how did your parents, what were the impressions of you? What did they think, you're not completing your studies?
You know, the thing with my parents were, was that, I mean, they're serious about studying and all them things, right? Because my father, you know, and my mother, serious about them things. And, you know, they have good scholars, and I'm sure they love their kids to be great scholars too, you know what I'm saying? I mean, who is it? The Prime Minister of Jamaica? Is it the guy, Ben Raichuk? He's one of my father's scholars. He's one of the private schools.
Oh, Ben Raichuk, who's the National Security Minister now in Jamaica?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was like a year after me. His brother was in the same class with me, you know, mm-hmm. William Chunmin and Delroy.
Yeah. Right?
Just call him Cowhead.
Is it called Delroy Chuck Cowhead?
that's what they used to call him.
Why? Why they call him Cowhead?
I don't know why they chose that name, but them days, you know, it's kind of easy for you to get that nickname.
Yes. That's the Jamaican way of doing things. So how many instruments do you play?
Well, like I can say I play bass. You know what I mean? I can fiddle around guitar a little bit. You know, fiddle around keyboard a little bit too. Especially in these days when you can program stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can do a lot of programming with keyboards and stuff like that, you know.
So
I've never really tried to be a full-fledged keyboard player. I never really sit down and say, okay, let me practice 4 hours today with no. I just want to learn how it works and stuff like that, fine. So when I play the bass, I can't say, no, that's a card. You're missing a note out of that card, you know what I mean? And, you know, stuff like mm-hmm. that. You know, so I can't play a bit, but for the live work, I wouldn't recommend myself for that.
So in terms of formal training, did you see formal training in the bass or just play by ear?
Well, I started out playing by ear, and I'm glad for that, you know, because not everybody who does formal training and go to regular playing are very successful in that, you know what I mean? So I tried that for me, it was better for me. I mean, looking back, then I went by ear, basically, and then I checked in and learned some little thing. I went to school of music for like 6 months, Afro-Jamaican course and the Melbourne Liston. And a lot of other guys who did that course, the Afro-Jamaican course, they stayed on and did more stuff in the school of music. You know, but for me, after the 6 months, that was enough for me, you know, because what happens at Melbourne, you know, Melbourne said she's a trombone player, right? And she used to direct the band for Quincy Jones and all that kind of thing.
Okay.
She's a big American, you know, a nice person too she was, right? But she was into horns, you know what I mean? If you listen to her, some of Bob Marley, she did one or two Bob Marley albums. She actually arranged the horns for, uh-huh. you know, like, for example, famously, Misty Morning, I Don't See No Sun,
mm-hmm.
right, you're the hard part of the hard work on that tune, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so she liked me and all that, everything okay, but she really taught, so she would come in, you go to class, and she'd come in and she'd put the hard piece part on. Give me my part. And I had to play with the power of the ba-da-do-ba-da-ba-da-ba. And all I played in that part is boom. And then I played the banana, boom. And I'm like, oh, come on. You know? So what I'm saying is that I was not challenged challenge at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was no challenge for a bass player in her class, you know, because she was concentrating so much on the horn. She was really good at the horn players, you know, she was really good. So after the 6-month course finished, you know, like I said, plenty of other guys seen her and did some further thing, and I kept doing my thing. And at that point, I was like putting like 8 teams out of the top 10 on the charts. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know, I really didn't think I needed to sit down and practice to play one note like that, boom, open it. And then she used to like one piece, so she'd write 2 little things, and then she'd say, okay, well, you're free in this part. You know? And then, you know, just for certain spots, we have a little special thing, she might just write them things for you. So that is all. That's really all. As far as like formal training goes,
yeah. You know,
my mother couldn't catch me for playing music. She said, "Val, she was young, and I'm God through the back door, you know." God, I'm more interested in being a cricketer.
Oh, so you like cricket? Did you play at George's?
No, sir. Well, tell me about it. Them years, I said, because I was in primary school, you know what I mean? Because you asked me 10 and a half years. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a youth of 9, 10 years, and she wants to come find me, teach you something. But she did finally, 1 or 2 times she catch me, I'm sitting down, and he said, I'm arguing that, no, that can't go like that, that can't sound, that don't sound right, and all that kind of foolishness. So I really didn't get no formal training from her. My brother did. And he used to play flute and all that,
okay,
in Miami and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a good keyboard player. My sister went to like grade 5 and stuff too. You know.
You are listening to What's Your Point on WPKN Radio. My guest is Val Douglas, bassist with the legendary Skatalites band. I am Garnet Ankle. Your mother wanted to teach you to play the piano.
Yeah.
So any regrets? Any regrets you didn't learn it?
No. No. It would have been nice to look back and say, oh, I learned that, or I had that time. No. But I could, even looking back, I really couldn't see myself sitting down and playing so like two, nah.
So you at the time you wanted to become a cricketer, you said. So the cricketer of the day would have been Sir Garfield Sobers, right? While you were growing up.
Yeah, that's the one I was just going to say. I wanted to be a Sobers.
You wanted to be like
so she couldn't catch me playing. But anyway, well, that's another story how that came to. Mm-hmm. It was really quick. We used to play with sponge ball and tennis ball and all them things.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody go Kingston, right? I come back with one of them real cricket ball.
Yeah.
And I have my official bat and all them things, mm-hmm. there, which is strange. I my money for my bat and all them things. See my money, I buy a bat. I want my brother to come and bowl the ball and touch against somebody and go bang! I said, no, this is your career done right. No, start to imagine that ball I touch against my local shank.
Yeah.
Which is the official machine, you know.
Yeah.
I imagine that ball I touch off of my shin and I said, no.
Mm.
You know, so that is how that carrier finish, right?
You should have had your cricket pads. You should have had your pads and all that kind of thing.
I food them things. Control.
Yeah.
Cricket pads. Maybe if we had that, yeah, I'm sure we would have continued. But them cricket pads. Me, the one person in this you could have really bat.
Yeah. So would you consider yourself then a batsman or a bowler or an all-rounder like Sir Gary Sobers?
No, was a wicked batsman, it's really funny because whenever you really bowl the ball, it's a combination of bowling, right, cricket bowling, mm-hmm. and baseball flinging.
Yes.
You understand?
Yeah.
Someone mm-hmm. running over and fling the ball, and the ball that passes about 120 miles per hour, the ball.
Yeah.
You understand? So you can see the problem when they come with a real tough ball, though, that are flying. No, I'm saying,
no, no. And those times you have no head guard, no helmets. So let's move forward now to when you joined the No Generation band. So how did you get involved in No Gen?
Well, after one year with my two virtues, I started the Mystics like 3 months, Falcons 3 weeks, and the Virtues for a year. And then, so, I was walking down half a tree road, Kaiser Spring Road actually.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit above half a tree,
yeah.
And me and a girlfriend of mine and she went. And she was going back to England the next day, so we were taking a movie and
Odeon Theatre.
Eh?
At the Odeon Theatre.
Oh, actually not Odeon, except the other one, Premier Theatre.
Okay.
Premier Plaza.
Yes, yeah.
You know Premier Plaza?
Yes.
It's called Premier Plaza because it's a Premier Theatre right there.
Yes.
And we just opened that thing and show Lawrence of Arabia or some shit.
And this guy here, Derek Harriet, has his music shop up there in that area.
Over the other side, right? Yeah. So I think it's alright, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked around, I mean, look, there's a guy named Pascal Lee, and he was at CAS too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm at CAS, he was at CAS at the same time. He was doing construction. But me into CAS, so me and I look for him CAS, okay, we have a nice Mini Cooper X, nice green and white Cooper S, really look good and sound good. And he wouldn't drive it fast or nothing, right? But it look good. Anyway, so he obviously had seen me play, you know, a couple of times and stuff like that, right? At CAS, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so no more musician, right? I mean, if he played it 2 times, he probably thought I was playing from a long time before. He don't even know that. That it was 2 times before my first, you know, two plays. Anyway, so his younger brother, right, Rob Berkeley, right, to call him Chucka Lee, he had started a little band, right? And that man was No Generation. Him and Ras Kabi was the bass player.
Yes.
I think.
Ras Kabi and became a vocalist, right?
Yeah, but Ras Kabi.
Discrimination.
I had ever played guitar. I had Ernest Wills to play guitar too.
Mm-hmm.
I had Finleg, Lyle Adams, drummer. Small drummer. Good drummer too, you know, so he's upset us. We call him Thin Legs, right?
Thin Legs.
Yeah, Thin Legs was a drummer and a keyboard player named Glenn Steer, a good, nice keyboard player too. So anyway, so Carby and Chucka, right, manager,
mm-hmm.
they used to go Jamaica School of Art together,
mm-hmm.
right? That's his North Street and East Street or somewhere around or so, right? So they know one another from there and they started this band thing. So when Carby got a scholarship to go to Fashion Institute of Technology or something like that in Rhode Island,
mm-hmm.
see? So he got this big scholarship because he was a good artist, you mm-hmm. understand? So he was leaving the band, so Pascal knows I need a bass player, and they just clicked to him, said, hold on, especially Jim Dougie, don't you know, play bass? And he was pulling him aside me, so beep, so he do a ball, so I'm Dougie, so I'm there. You say, here, I'm going to talk to you about that thing. So, my brother have a little band, you know, a little band. They were trying to things still, and I went, interesting. A matter of fact, you know, you could have probably like lead the man and I'm just watching. I get half of a lead of man now. Yeah, I'm like, wow, I didn't start to swim. So I said, all right. So they're playing at they will be playing at club name, I don't remember the name of the club, but inside Mimi in Legally Plaza,
right? Yeah.
They played Sunday, and this is like, I think this is a Friday, I think this is a Thursday. I'm saying, come listen to them if you like it, you know what I mean? Come in, come play some bass, and you can lead the band to one thing, and you know. And so, I'm sorry, I'm coming and check it. So the Sunday I went to the place. I think there was them playing and might have been in a circle playing too.
Okay.
Like more than one band, I remember. Mm-hmm. But anyway, me hear them and me hear the other band. And I kind of like the roots, the sound now. The roots, the sound, which I really liked. You know what I mean? I said, So after that, I said, yeah, man, we can come in and things. So that's why I ended up starting to play with them.
With No Generations. Your back sounds like Peter Potter, Life Is Just For Living, Ernie Smith, and Dennis Brown's Silhouette. You did a lot, Lorna Bennett's Breakfast in Bed. You did a lot of good songs that are now staples. Yes, Beat on Babylon, Juno Biles. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
You worked alongside the Abyssinians as well. That's great. So after a while, you stopped being a band that went on the street, but being a studio band. Tell us a little about that.
No, we used to be on the street. You know, we're on the street. So that was like, that was 68 into 60.
The early 70s.
So I played with them for like a year, for that year while I was still at CAST, yeah.
Mm. So you played with the Now Gen while you were still at CAST?
Yeah, that was kind of interesting, but a little bit rough, because we do gigs at like Club Maracas in Guatarios.
Mm.
And you have to fly over there after you done gigs, after you done class, the guys come pick you up, and one piece of driving through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's
then after that, come back here, and the next day, you have to work in class again. So it was kind of interesting, but kind of rough, yeah.
Yeah. So, in the interest of time, I'm going to cut this out of the interview. This is what I'm saying right now. But then, okay. So we need to get on to the Scatterlights. So, how did you join the Scatterlights band? You're currently the bass player, and you're filling a shoe, or I'm not sure if you can say it, because double bassist and co-founder Lloyd Brevet. You're in Lloyd Brevet's shoe right now. How do you feel sitting in such a huge shoe with a double bassist for the band?
No problem. I mean, first of all, Tamama Cook, I knew Tamama Cook from, 70s, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, because what used to happen, every year, you have like festival song competitions and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And so people would be writing, so, you know, festival song, they always try to put horns in them, right? Mm-hmm. You know, leave on the horns.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing. Whatever, you know what I'm saying? So they would write it, and then they would try to get musicians who actually play in the studio, who have vibe. But they try also to get musicians who have that vibe, but who also can read music a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So I would end up playing a few of them, play for a few, like Tinga Stewart Festival song.
Uncle Benji, that's one of it?
Yeah, but them two, Roman Stewart, Ray Festival.
Yeah, so it was Ernie Smith who wrote that song for Tinga Stewart.
For Tinga, that's right.
Uh-huh.
I would pay pass up to for Marvin Brooks Festival. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but anyway, the point I'm saying is that, so I used to meet Tommy Bakuk ancestors like that, because they were hard players, you know. So me and him, so Mali, I think, like, you know, me and Mali is a good vibe, and, you know.
Were you with the band while PJ Patterson was the manager, former Prime Minister of Jamaica, Patterson? Were you a member at the time while he was manager?
No, man. We just got to hear them live. Did one gig with them. Well, before we get to that, no, man. But PJ was managing them from the inception.
Okay.
Them just come out and
okay.
You know, but when they stop playing, when they come back, PJ was no manager. That time PJ got to Prime Minister and everything.
Yeah,
got
in the politics.
Bigger things to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, so what was that? So Tommy would call me in for some solo stuff he was doing, like solo albums and stuff like that, that he was doing. And, you know, God, enough respect to Tawaku, as I say. I mean, it was one of the, he's probably the only producer I ever worked for. That one album, and then like 3 months later, after he done pay me, 3 months later, 6 months later, I was calling. I said, Dougie, I said, yes, sir, yeah, what was that? So I have a little thing for you, you know. I said, what happened? So why? The album, what did I do? Get licensed to Japan, as a Japanese people.
Mm-hmm.
So nice.
Very honest,
so,
man.
I have money for you. So, oh, really? I was, give me a your story. Really. I don't know if you know that was none of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I check. We are like, wow.
Yeah.
This is something normal. This don't happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, how long have you been with the band? How long have you been with Catalyze?
Anyway, so what happened? We'll get to it now. So in 1994, right? They were doing this album named High Bobska.
Uh-huh.
And the bass player was out of tune, and they were having problems. There was some bad vibe going on. Really couldn't talk to him. The communication wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to show him the history of auto tune and thing. You know, I work out to Tommy, just said, all right, cool, man. Yeah, we'll just do it. Yeah, man, do it. And after I've done it, they just called me, right? So I just got to Jamaica, my mother's funeral, and I was come back up Saturday evening. He called me in Jamaica, so I told him, say, yeah, I'm going to be there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I come up Saturday evening and Sunday, I go studio. I'm going to do all the bass parts in the album. 2 hours, 35 minutes, one after each, just
wow.
One after the next, next, pop,
yeah.
pop.
Yeah.
So that was High Bops, so that's the first time I played on other Scatterlight.
So we've got to leave it there for the time, because of time. So any parting shots before we say so long?
No, but we're going to start period. So that is how I got into that. Then in 2005, they are the bass players kind of split up because he wanted to do some his own thing. So they called me. So from 2005, I've been playing with them. Yeah.
Okay.
So see how that goes.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show. You have been listening to a conversation with Val Douglas, bassist with the legendary Scatterlights band. This has been What's Your Point? I am Garnet Angle. We'll be right back.
Support for WPKN comes from Save the Sound. Save the Sound leads environmental action across our region with programs that fight climate change, preserve lands, clean our waters, and restore ecosystems. From August 14th through the 31st, Paddle for the Sound offers participants the chance to paddleboard, kayak, swim, or walk our way to a healthier environment. More information at savethesound.org/paddle2020. This is FC Buzz on WPKN Radio. A brief look at what's happening around Fairfield County.
This is David Green with this week's selection from FC Buzz Events, the best guide to arts and culture in Fairfield County. Find it at culturalalliancefc.org. Through Sunday, 1 to 4, on the Nordstrom Court of Norwalk's Sono Collection Mall, see Robert Abriola paint a canvas as part of Sono Art Cares, a project in which 10 artists live paint in the Sono Collection, one a week, through September 27th. Abriola is a classically trained artist, designer, and art director at various agencies in New York and Connecticut, and best known for his work in the music industry as the former creative director of EMI Music North America. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., Westport Continuing Education's online teen workshop, The Art of Innovation, Cultivating Qualities for the Emerging Future, fosters creative thinking through collaboration, deep listening, and increasing self-awareness. Developed in collaboration with John Cusano, systems change agent, students will discuss the belief systems and cultural backgrounds of our diverse society, finding common ground and appreciating multiple perspectives. Scholarships available. Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 12, the Fairfield Museum and History Center presents Time Travelers, an in-person summer workshop for ages 8 through 12. Step back in time and discover what life was like long ago. Write with a quill pen, make traditional crafts and toys, including a corn husk doll, a haversack, a sailor's valentine, and more. Using the 1750 Ogden House and the 1780 Sun Tavern as inspiration, explore the different uses for rooms in 18th and 19th century homes and businesses. Tuesday, 5:30 p.m., Norwalk Symphony's conductor Jonathan Yates will speak about Beethoven Symphony No. 3, the Eroica, in the next online Conversations with the Conductor. Listen ahead of time to a recommended performance by the Danish Chamber Orchestra to get the most out of the conversation. Tuesday at 6 on Facebook Live, Westport Museum of History and Culture presents, as part of its Tuesday Treasures series, Dragon Lady. Westporter Sigrid Schultz was a renowned war correspondent during the Second World War, serving as bureau chief of the Central European Office of the Chicago Tribune in Berlin. To gain a clearer picture of Schultz's importance during the conflict, museum staff has recently explored the profiles of top Nazi targets that she created for the U.S. Office of Strategic Services, an agency that later became the CIA. Tuesday, 8 o'clock. Cosmologist and professor of physics at the University of Texas Austin, Catherine Fries, presents a virtual lecture on Zoom and YouTube on the dark side of the universe. Fries will recount the hunt for dark matter, which along with dark energy comprises 95% of the atoms of the known universe and is the subject of her book, The Cosmic Cocktail, Three Parts Dark Matter. You are encouraged to actively participate with your questions. For details on these and hundreds more events, check cultural